Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Patrick, and this is Night of the Living Podcast. I am very excited about this, not only because this is episode one, I'm excited because on this introductory episode, I'm going to be talking about and breaking down one of my all-time favorite movies for you, my listeners. This movie and I have a great deal in common. Not with the supernatural element or anything like that, but more of the smaller details. When I was growing up in South Oklahoma City, I was a social outcast. I loved and still do love all things metal music, especially death and black metal. I love playing role-playing games, but most importantly, I love horror movies. And the characters in this movie that I'm going to be covering today, well, they are absolutely no different than me at all, except for geographical location and the vastly supernatural element contained in this film. On this episode, we will be traveling to the town of Greypoint in beautiful New Zealand, and we will be blaring death metal and black metal all the freaking way while summoning demons in the process. On this episode, we will be deep diving into the one, the only, Deathgasm.
Zach played bass, so we started a band.
Hey, this is Giles and Dion.
Hey.
Huh?
Right, first things first, what are we called?
Murder boner?
Toothed vagina.
Oh, maggot sperm.
Cannibal unicorn.
How about like 13 S's, you know, like.
Got it.
Deathgasm.
All spelt in capitals. Lowercase is for pussies.
All right, so Deathgasm was released in the year of our Lord, 2015. The IMDb description of it reads, Metalhead Brody is sent to live with his Christian aunt and uncle and meat-headed cousin David after his drug-addicted mother was sent away. Brody seems unable to fit in until he meets the mysterious Zach at a record store. Joined by their love of metal, the two form the band Deathgasm, along with fellow outcasts Dion and Giles. However, when Brody and Zach break into the house of metal star Ricky Daggers, they find the mysterious sheet music known as the Black Hymn. Deathgasm plays the Black Hymn, which unleashes a demon known as Aeloth who possesses the town's citizens. Now it's up to Deathgasm and popular girl Medina to fight the demons, prevent the apocalypse, and save the day. Well, that pretty much summed up the entire movie. I'll see you later. I'm just kidding. So, Deathgasm stars Milo Cawthorn as Brody, James Joshua Blake as Zach, and Kimberly Crossman as Medina, and also stars Sam Berkeley as Dion and Daniel Crosswell as Giles. It was written and directed by Jason Haldon, and the total runtime of the film is an hour and 26 minutes. So basically, to kind of give you a brief breakdown before we dive into the movie a little bit further, the movie itself was shot in West Auckland, New Zealand, and took about 20 days to film, with many of these scenes shot only in one take. Howden entered the movie in the 2013 Make My Horror Movie Contest and won $200,000 New Zealand dollars, or roughly $123,000 U.S. dollars, and he used every penny of that to make the film. The movie's concept is based completely off of Evil Dead, the 1981 version, of course. Both movies, of course, are about teenagers who unknowingly summon demons. Then both have to fight to survive and figure out a way to reverse the spell from the object that which was used to release the curse in the first place. So we've got, you know, Ash, he finds the Necronomicon and they read from said book and unleash the demons. Zach and Brody find this sheet music that you'll learn about here in a little bit. And yeah, all hell breaks loose there as well. So let's go on ahead and jumpstart the movie. So we open with Brody telling us why most parents don't like their kids listening to metal. It's because of satanic imagery and the possibility of summoning demons. but it winds up being real in this case. Now, the one thing about this particular scene as it opens up is Howden's tribute that he pays to all metal music throughout this movie. Predominantly, he pays a lot of tribute to death metal and black metal. So when we first see this scene open up, it's several overexposed black and white pictures that show Brody covered in blood. Of course, if you are a fan of black metal, more in line with the early 90s black metal with artists like Darkthrone, you'll notice that this particular scene kind of has that homage to Darkthrone's Transylvania Hunger and a number of other Norwegian, Swedish, and Finnish black metal band covers. Very well done. I actually love this scene. But he then actually poses a statement, but it all winds up real, and he goes on to narrate and tell you why. He then states he's going to start at the beginning and tell us, you know, about his mom getting messed up and going down on a mall Santa, and then she ends up getting thrown in jail, which ends up having him sent away to live with his aunt and uncle and his cousin David in the town of Greypoint. And we learn very quickly because of this that his aunt and his uncle are very, very religious people. Like, there are crosses and Bibles all over the place. They really have an uncomfortable cringe about them when we see Brody get out of the taxi. This poor kid, he is struggle busing all the way as he's trying to get out of this taxi. He's grabbed his guitar, he's grabbed his amp, he's got a bunch of rolled up posters, a couple of bags, he's clumsily dropping stuff, and his parents are looking at him, expecting another boy next door like their son David, but instead they get this long-haired metalhead, Brody. So, his uncle does not like him listening to metal at all. There are a couple of points in the movie where he references it as the devil's music, and we see a scene where Brody's already set up in the bedroom. He's got his posters hung up. He's got a headset on. He's playing his guitar. His uncle opens the door. He's got a Bible in his hand, smiling, and he looks around and sees everything, and then kind of backs away like, oh my God, he's opening the gates of hell, and then just leaves. We also learn that, based on what I have here in my notes, that his cousin David is a prick. We'll learn that David has, quote, injured more nerds than asthma. We see him and a friend bullying a kid at school, and we would learn that that kid is Dion. Brody saves him. He's basically kind of hesitant at it or at first about it. He sees him getting, you know, he's got a headlock going on. We see David and his friend shoving a 20-sided die up his nose, and that, you know, is very uncomfortable. If you ever play role-playing games, you know what I'm talking about those round dice. It's kind of a funny scene, or not really funny, but it is kind of funny, because, you know, after Brody saves him, his cousin basically talks down to him, says a few cross things about his mom. He kind of pushes his way out of the view, and then his friend gives him the double bird, and he goes off camera. Brody goes over to Dion, and he checks on him to see if he's okay. Dion basically tells him that, you know, this is a normal occurrence. Well, as he picks up the dice, Brody looks at him and says, here's your dice. And then Dion, of course, corrects him and says, it's actually a die. It's singular for dice. And, you know, he tries to nerdingly mansplain the difference. out in the distance, Brody sees Medina walking, and he asks Dion, who's that? Dion tells him, hey, no, she's a bad idea. Don't worry about her. She likes guys more like your cousin. Dion then leans in, and he says, hey, at lunch, do you want to do something badass? Brody smiles, but is unexpectedly now playing D&D with Dion and our new friend Giles that we meet in the scene. We learn that Giles got suspended once for violating a CPR dummy. And as they're playing, Dion and Giles argue about or over Giles' use of a fire spell on a fire troll. Brody, watching this back and forth, puts on a set of headphones and begins listening to some music. We're then transported to a quick little scene of a mountaintop where we see Brody playing an axe-shaped guitar dressed like a barbarian, and we see Medina down at his side on her hands and knees, basically hugging his leg and, you know, caressing his stomach. And then he's jamming along playing this riff, and then he looks down and uses the concentration in his eyes to blast off her top. That fantasy is quickly interrupted as we see David and his friend Terry from earlier barge into the room that they were playing D&D in with super soakers, and they shoot them all, get them all wet and laugh and then just run off. As they're checking and, like, you know, wiping everything off, Giles takes a whiff of his jacket and it dawns on him that they did not get shot with water. They got shot with piss, and that this happened again. Well, we go to our next scene. We now see Brody in class. He's drawing in his notebook, and he frantically flips the page, and we see what looks like a head with a penis jutting out from the top. We got penises for eyes, and then we got one penis growing where his nose should be. He frantically flips the page again and doodles more, and then we see our teacher looking over his shoulder, and he makes a few remarks about the shading, compliments the artistry, and then he turns around and yanks the page out of the notebook, wads it up, tells him he's got 2 weeks in detention for his lewd drawing, walks up and throws it in the trash. The class is laughing at him as this happens, and Brody just looks pissed at this point. It's at this moment when we realize that Brody is actually having a tough go at things at this new school. He's already got a bully in the form of his own flesh and blood cousin. He's got another bully in the form of his cousin's friend, Terry. And he just got blasted on with a super soaker full of piss. He's already been pushed around. He's already been talked down to. He's already got a teacher breathing down his neck because of his artwork. He ain't having a good day at this point. But at our next scene, though, we go on ahead and we look, or, you know, check on Medina. She's walking from the school to a car that's being driven by David. He comments on her being late yet again, and she tells him that, unlike him, some of us actually attend class. David then glances out the windshield at Brody and says, "There's my idiot cousin." She remarks to him that bullying is not a good look for him, and he smacks his steering wheel and gets pissed. We then follow Brody, who is walking to the record store, Alien Records. There's a narration where he talks about that one of the things that he loved doing was he would leave school and he would go to the neighborhood record store, and here at Graypoint, it's no different, and he introduces us to Alien Records. He talks about how Byron runs the place and that there is a fortune teller named Abigail who gives fortunes and tarot readings there. Brody walks up to the counter as he enters, and Byron asks him how he's doing. Brody, very, very dry, basically says, "Not good." Pretty much in that tone, he's like, "Not good." Byron then points to a copy of a record by a band called Hexen Sword, and we see that it's $213. He then tells Brody that there were only 666 of these printed, and then points behind Brody and tells him that that one of them belongs to that kid over there. Brody turns around and he looks at Byron and he looks at the kid behind him and he walks on over. And they start browsing the records side by side. This is actually one of the funnier scenes in the movie. It's a very quiet scene, but it's funny, and funny to me because I've actually had encounters like this growing up. So we see Brody thumbing through the records. He comes across an album by Trivium. I think if I remember the scene correctly, it was the album Ascendancy. Pretty great album, actually, for Trivium's early work. We see the other guy nod. the other guy turns around and he pulls out a little something heavier. It was an album by the band Devourment. Brody smiles as he's looking at the album cover, but at the same time as he's looking, he thumbs through the records and he grabs one and pulls it up. And the other dude sees that the album is by Poison. Brody's like, oh God, and he puts it back down. And the next album that he pulls out was another death metal album by the band Autopsy. We then hear the other guy get really excited and he says, quote, fuck yeah, and he takes the record and he looks at it. They talk for a moment and then the dude looks at Brody and introduces himself as Zach. And then he says, hey, you want to get the hell out of here and hang out? Brody says yes. So we then get another small montage scene where Brody introduces the viewer to Zach and tells us about Zach's history. Brody starts off by explaining that when he met Zach, his entire life changed. He starts off our story about how Zach got expelled from school for attacking a kid with a compass. He then mentions that Zach's dad runs an auto shop, but really doesn't do much of anything while he's there. We then see some montage clips of, you know, random acts of vandalism. We see them spray painting a wall. We see them at Zach's place smoking weed out of a gas mask bong. We then get a small clip of them making napalm because the screen literally says how to make napalm and it gives you the detailed instructions. They then take that said napalm over to a field, and another tribute to Norwegian black metal, especially in the early 90s, was them burning the words, or I should say, attempted to spell the words Hail Satan, but instead Satan was spelled S-A-T-I-N, which honestly I thought was a hilarious nod. We then see Brody in his garage with Giles and Dion. Dion, of course, is on a keyboard, and Giles is behind a drum set. He starts off by saying in another narration that Zach plays bass, so we decided to start a band. You heard the clip at the beginning of the episode before I started deep diving, and that's where we're at now. And it was actually one of the most hilarious exchanges. I won't repeat it. If you want to know the actual scene, I would urge either A, watch the movie, or B, rewind this episode back to that point, because it was actually pretty great. He introduces Giles and Dion to Zach. Zach then hocks a loogie, spits on the ground, and says, before we start, what do we call ourselves? And then, of course, we had the name exchange, and then we hear Zach with that fantastic line of, how about Deathgasm, spelled in all caps, because lowercase is for pussies. Another name gets thrown out, and then we see another hilarious bit where the fourth wall gets broken here, as a hand pulls the camera back to him, and we see Zach yell out, Deathgasm, and then they start playing music. Well, as they're playing, we see everybody jamming out, having a good time. Zach tells Brody to, you know, throw in a lead, and he's trying to play a nice little solo while everybody's jamming along, and we see that Brody's actually a little bit sloppy. Zach stops the practice, looks at Brody and says, dude, I thought you knew how to play. And he reminds Zach, dude, I'm a little bit rusty, but I'll get there. It's okay. We then see Brody and Zach after that walking up a hill. Zach pulls out a flashlight and Brody asks what's it for. Zach says, to see. He then leans out of frame and comes back up wearing a full ski mask. He points towards a house and tells Brody to watch his back and runs to it. Brody hesitates, he crosses his arms, but then he reluctantly follows behind him. We then see Brody quietly and clumsily crawl through a window as he cautiously walks through the house, whisper shouting for Zach. Zach sneaks up on him and scares him. He shines a light on the wall, revealing a Hacks and Sword poster, which brings a smile to Brody's face. And then they would see newspaper clippings featuring the band's frontman, Ricky Daggers. In a funny little bit, I had to actually jot down word for word what the two said to each other. Brody says, quote, didn't he use to kill live rabbits on stage with a crowbar? Zach responds, no, it was with a claw hammer. Brody would then ask what happened to Daggers. Zach tells him that he spent all his band's money on coke, hookers, and Satanist shit, word for word. And that last he heard, quote, moved to a crappy New Zealand town. Then it clicked with Brody where exactly they are at, the home of Ricky Daggers. They go into a room with a wall full of amplifiers, and they see Ricky Daggers laying on a mattress holding the same Hex and Sword album that was at the record store. Zach takes it, and suddenly Daggers wakes up. He yells at them to drop the record and demands to know why they are there, followed by saying, quote, Aeon sent you, didn't he? He holds a bat in front of him to keep him at bay and ready to swing. Brody attempts to reassure him at this point that they are just metalheads and fans. Daggers asks, how did you find me? Zach responds by flashing a piece of paper and tells him, you were outed. Daggers freaks out and tells them, we're all going to die. At this point outside, we see a sedan pull up in front of the house. And in the passenger seat is the very same piece of paper that Zach showed Daggers. We see the man enter the house, and Daggers tells Brody and Zach to take the record and to, quote, hide it and guard it with your life. They leave, leaving Daggers and the man alone. The man then asks Daggers, where is it at? Daggers then swings the bat at him. The man grabs the bat and smacks him in the face with it, bringing him to his knees. He then pulls out a straight razor, and as Daggers tells him to do it, the man cuts his throat deeply and kills him. The next moment, we see Zach and Brody had arrived back at Zach's place. They sit down and Brody comments on what happened. Meanwhile, Zach pulls some papers out of the record and tosses them onto the ground. He then pulls the actual record out and says, quote, dude, what the hell? It's a fucking Rick Astley record. And then he throws it. Brody sees the papers that Zach dropped, and then he picks them up. As he does so, the lights around him begin to flicker. Zach asks what it is, and we see that it's sheet music. He asks Brody if he could read it, and Brody tells him, quote, I think so, it's pretty universal. Brody then sees some words on the top of one of the pages and shows Zach. Zach asks him what it says, and Brody tells him he doesn't know because it's Latin. Zach laughs and then says, quote, what, like Dora the fucking Explorer? Zach then tells Brody they should learn the music and use it as a Deathgasm song. Our next scene takes us into a large white room with only a rug and a desk with a man sitting at it. We learn that the man who killed Daggers is named Vaden. He advises the other man, who we learn is Aeon, that the pages are gone. Aeon corrects him by saying, the Black Hymn, pages are paper, the Black Hymn is absolute power. Vaden explains that Daggers did not have the Black Hymn and that somebody got to it before him. He then tells Aeon that there was a break-in and that the Black Hymn should be in Greypoint somewhere and that he needs more time. Aeon becomes angry. As he becomes angry, two men enter the room wearing black cloaks and masks. As they entered, Aeon tells them to take his head off. One swings a sword and chops Vaden's head off. Aeon gets angry about the blood getting all over the rug and demands they do it again. One runs and grabs a tarp and lays it out, as the other one lifts up the body and holds the head in place so that the one who laid out the tarp can tap him on the back of the neck with the sword, and they slowly drop the head. Aeon approves of this, and as he does, we see a woman pop her head out from under the desk. He forces it back down and tells the guys to go get his car and that they're heading to Greypoint. We are then shown the town of Greypoint from a hilltop view. And then we see the flickering of a camera screen, only to see Dion's face with corpse paint and glasses. And it's obvious he's got a video camera. They're trying to film a music video. And what's beautiful about this scene, in the fact that it's absolutely hilarious, is that this is a total nod to a classic Immortal video. It's going to actually be for the Deathgasm song titled, quote, Intestinal Bungee Jump. I thought that was pretty goddamn great. Here we see Dion is acting as director. We see Brody and Zach jamming on their guitar and bass, unplugged, of course. And Dion is telling Zach, hey, this is great. Why don't you go ahead and prop your leg up on that tree? Brody does so. He's like, hey, how about going a little higher? And he does so. And now he's all like super stretched out. It's pretty freaking great. And once they finish, we go to our next scene, which we see the trunk of Zach's car open up and spray painted on the floor of it are the words, bodies go here. And then we see Giles place his drum set down. They're parked in front of a shop. Brody asks if anybody wants anything, and Zach simply says, condoms, Vaseline, jumper cables, and ammonium nitrate. To which Brody simply replies, I don't think they sell that combination of things. He backs up and he bumps into Medina. They introduce themselves to each other. He mentions her dating David, and she changes the subject by simply asking if they want to get some ice cream. And now we go to our next scene, which is at a park, and they're sitting on a bench eating ice cream cones. This scene actually is, it's a cute little meme that's gone around where you see Brody dressed completely to the nines as a black metal musician. He's got the corpse paint on, he's got a skinless t-shirt, wearing an ammunition belt, form-fitted pants, gauntlets, combat boots. Meanwhile, Medina is dressed in a white dress, and they're both eating ice cream cones, and it's pretty cute, actually. She reaches in her purse, or her bag, rather, and she pulls out Brody's penis head drawing from class, and that their math teacher took it and threw it away, and she got it back for him. They talk music, and Brody asks her if she likes metal, and she basically tells him that it's not her thing. He then lays out some wisdom, and I love the words of wisdom that he said, because growing up, I kind of felt the exact same way. He says, and I quote, it's like when life sucks and you feel alone and empty. You stick on some metal and life is better because somebody else knows the pain and the rage that you're going through. Beautiful words. I actually really relate to that with a lot of the stuff that I've listened to. And I've always said the angrier, the better. He then grabs a group of CDs and hands them to her. We're seeing the album covers from bands like Cattle Decapitation's album, Humanure, a couple of other ones. And she's looking at these and she's cringing a little bit. And then she comes across one that was by a band called Anal Cunt. To Brody's surprise, he quickly grabs another CD and hands it to her and says, hey, how about this one? And she smiles and we go to our next scene. We're now back at Brody's garage here. He shows Dion and Giles the pages, and they ask where they found them because of how old they look and comment that they should be in a museum because they look really, really old. Zach tells them that they found them, and they start to play the music off of it. Brody's uncle goes outside to the garage door, and he pounds it and says the words, I'm warning you, Brody, stop that devil music now. Brody responds in kind by simply turning up his amp. I love that little bit right there. It was so subtle, but that is like that symbol of rebellion when you get told to turn it down, and instead of turning it down, you turn it up. I think the Skid Row movie said turn it up to 11, but, you know, I digress. The lights flicker around them, and we see his uncle begin to change as the sky starts to get dark. We then see a scene at the record store while the music is still playing throughout the scene here. We see Abigail reading the palm of somebody, and that palm is now cut open with the name Aloth etched in it. She gasps and kind of lurches back a little bit. We see the band seemingly becoming entranced. Their gear is beginning to bleed, and we see bugs and worms and whatnot crawling on it. The music stops, and we see electricity shooting from Brody's guitar strings. We then see Brody's uncle come to after this, and his eyes are now bleeding from the tear ducts. He then turns around and, you know, upon realizing this, and he hurries back to the house. The guys load up the gear and they leave, and Zach tells Brody he choked again. Brody apologizes and describes how he was feeling, basically describing in full detail what it felt like to have, or what it feels like to physically have a panic attack. Zach leaves, and as Brody picks up the pages, we see lights, or the lights around him flicker again. We now see Medina. She's walking down a sidewalk with a CD player in her hand, and she's got her headphones on, and she stops. And she basically looks at the CD player, and then she bends down, rummages through her bag, and she pulls out the CD that Brody gave her. She takes it out, puts it into the CD player, presses play. We now are flashed to a scene similar to the fantasy that Brody had early on in the movie, only this time we see the same mountaintop, and we see Medina dressed like a Valkyrie, basically. And she's got a sword over her head, and she's yelling, and these two hot chicks are on their knees, hugging her legs. They start to kiss, and Medina looks down, and she smiles. And then we flash back to the sidewalk, and to her simply saying the word, "Whoa." And then she smiles and continues walking. Our next scene takes us back to math class. As the teacher is giving a lesson, Medina looks back behind her at Brody, and the two lock eyes and smile at each other. Brody then looks back down at his hand, and we see that he wrote the Latin phrase from the pages on his palm, and he's feverishly trying to translate them using a Latin dictionary. From here, we see he fully translated the words, and they read, "Summoning the King of Demons, a black hymn for gaining power and fortune." We then see Brody outside of the school, and he's walking, and David appears from around the corner, and his friend Terry appears off to the side behind him. David pushes him, and he falls over Terry's back and lands really hard on the ground. David warns him not to go near Medina. Those aren't the words that he used, but personally, I'm not going to repeat them because I'm not that kind of guy. But he then tells Terry to rip his, quote, girly earring out of his ear. He does so, and then the two proceed to beat the hell out of Dave, or out of Brody. We then see Zach smoking a cigarette outside, and he's siphoning gas out of an ambulance. Medina walks by him and sees what he's doing, and she asks him if he's still in petrol. He says, "No, I'm still in diesel." She then asks if he feels guilty about it. He looks around, and then he basically says no. And then asks her to hold on to his hose. So she takes the hose, kind of cringes a little bit, and puts it back to her side. He stands up, and she asks if he'd seen Brody because he wasn't in class. He says no, and then she writes a note for him and asks Zach to give it to him and not to read it, and then she leaves. Zach reads the note, and we see that it's her telling Brody to meet her at the park at 9 tonight. He sniffs it, puts it in his pocket. We then see Brody walking up the sidewalk to his house, and he looks a mess. He's been beaten to hell. We're now at the park. Medina's waiting for Brody, but Zach shows up. She asks if he gave him her note. Zach tells her Brody isn't coming and that he's not interested and that, quote, he's got other shit going on. Medina's visibly upset. He attempts to make her, makes himself look good and puts his jacket on her shoulder. And a second later, he pulls out a flask and offers her a drink, which she accepts. We then quickly go back and see Brody. He's having flashbacks about the beating that he took earlier. While he's looking at his room, it's been completely ransacked. His posters are ripped off the wall. There's some paint on something that reads, "Brody sucks jizz," and then we see a couple of broken items. Then the scene switches back to Zach and Medina, and now at this point, Medina and Zach are making out. And there we see that for a split second, and then we go back to Brody's room, and he's looking around at a couple of things, and we see him, you know, looking at a picture that was ripped in half of him and his mom. And then we go back to Zach and Medina, still making out. We go back to Brody, who now lifts up his mattress a little bit, and he pulls out the pages, and he looks at them. And then we see this menacing smile come across his face. We're now back at the garage. We see Brody is plugging in his guitar, and Zach asks, "Are you going to tell us who gave you that shiner?" To which Brody simply answers, "Won't matter soon. Let's fucking do this." He turns on his amp, and then Zach walks over and starts whispering to him the words, "Dude, you know I have your back. Tell me who they are. I'll fuck them up." Brody says he's fine. Zach then tells him a trick that his dad taught him about making someone think that their, quote, gross junk is hanging from their zipper, and when they look down, you just simply punch them in the face. That's worldly advice, man. I mean, honestly. They begin playing the hymn again. The lights buzz again, and we see it immediately affect the guys and Brody's uncle. He begins frothing at the mouth. We see it becoming more intense this time, and we then see Brody's uncle violently vomiting blood. Electricity starts shooting from the pages, and the garage opens on its own. We now see that it's affecting the town. The band collapses to the ground, and then they come to a little bit later. Dion asks them if they were asleep. Brody smiles and looks at the pages and asks if he looks different or appears more powerful. Zach punches him in the gut. Brody smiles and punches him back with no effect at all, to which Zach says, "You could be weaker than before." Brody then becomes concerned that he may have done something wrong. He mentions that the music should have summoned demons, which everybody gets a kick out of. We're now back at school. Brody is in the restroom washing his hands in the sink. A second later, we see David's friend Terry, who's now possessed, and he's wearing these ridiculous heart or red heart-shaped glasses. He slides into view, like, just kind of, it's like he's on some kind of a rolling mechanism, just sliding into view. He looks at Brody, and he says, "Can you hear the trumpets, Brody? They're getting louder. The blind one is coming. He's going to suck out your intestines for 1,000 years and use your ribs as toothpicks." Brody's response is simply, "Okay." Terry slides out of frame. A brief second later, he slides back into frame and says, "Did I mention he's going to roast your nuts on an open fire while they are still attached, of course?" Brody says, "No, you didn't, Terry." "Well, he is." And then he slides out. I love that scene a lot just simply because of the sliding in and out. I thought it was great. And the use of the heart-shaped sunglasses was absolutely hilarious. We're going to learn throughout the remainder of the movie the importance of the sunglasses, because he's not going to be the only one you see like this. We're going to learn about the demons. We're going to learn about Aeloth and why he's called the Blind One. And it's all going to make sense later on. But just know, Terry looks fucking ridiculous in these red heart-shaped sunglasses. We're now back in math class. The teacher is seen groaning, or is heard groaning, and he's writing these strange sigils and symbols on the whiteboard, holding his marker like he's etching something with a knife. He farts twice, and the class begins to chuckle at it. He then farts a third time, and we see a little bit of blood coming out. Medina grows a little concerned about this, and she asks if he's okay. He then farts again, and more blood comes out, and then he turns around, and he slides over to the first girl that's in one of the close by rows. He screams, and he violently vomits blood all over. All of the kids get up out of their seats, and they back up towards the back of the class. We see Medina close by Brody. There's no exchange. The teacher stops, And then the girl starts wiping the blood off of her face, and then he does it again. We now see Brody sitting in a car in Zach's dad's shop, describing what happened in class. Zach lights a joint and hands it to him. He mentions how it was especially weird that Medina ignored him throughout this. As they talk, there is a banging behind him. Zach gets a little annoyed by the banging and sees that his dad was banging his head against the garage door with his face covered by a t-shirt. Zach pulls him away and removes the shirt from his head and checks to see if his dad's okay, to which his dad responds by backhanding him, sending him across the room. We then see his dad's eyes are no longer in his head and he's holding them in his hand. In a demonic voice, he simply says, "I can see you." His dad attacks him, sending Brody to the ground and begins to choke Zach. Brody finds an electric sander and begins smacking the demon dad with it to get him to let go of Zach. Finally, he turns it on and slices his face with it. And then he smacks him in the arm with it, and then he cuts him. Our demon dad turns to receive a violent sanding in the face. He falls to his back. Zach gets up off of the ground quickly, hits a lever, and runs towards Brody as an engine block falls on Dad's head, squashing it completely. This conversation exchange between Zach and Brody, I thought, was very sad but very hilarious at the same time. Zach looks down, says, "Brutal." Brody looks at him and says, "Should we check his pulse?" Zach then responds, He has a fucking engine for a head. I don't think he's going to be walking this off, man." Brody then somberly says, "Shit, your dad, I'm sorry." Zach yells, hits a couple of things, comes back, and simply says, "You know, it's weird, but I think he would have wanted to go out like this." Brody looks at him and simply says, "His eyes ripped out, face grinded off, and then head mounted under a car engine." Zach and Brody both look down at the dad, and Zach simply says, "Totally." Brody then gets a little upset and looks at Zach and apologizes profusely and takes responsibility for everything. He tells him that he translated the pages and says what they were for, and explains how after that, the town went completely crazy. Zach gets pissed because Brody knew and did not tell him about it. Brody then remembers that Abigail from the record store reads fortunes and is all into this witchy shit and says that they need to go and see her because she knows all about the stuff. We then see Zach driving them to the record store. As they're driving, Brody looks out the window and watches as people in the town have all become possessed. They're attacking each other. They're attacking the normal folk, killing them, killing anything that moves, basically. Meanwhile, we then see Dion and Giles cautiously approaching Brody's front door. Giles is carrying a paintball gun and watching the road as Dion, wearing Hulk hands, runs up to check to see if Brody's home. Dion knocks and sees that nobody's there. He goes back to Giles, and then a demon approaches them, from the front. Giles shoots paintballs at the demon, and nothing happens. He then jerks Dion around and reaches into his pocket and pulls out a bag full of D&D dice and blows them into his paintball gun and fires two of them at the demon's face, hitting him square in the forehead, but nothing happens. The demon growls and walks towards them, and as he gets closer and closer, he gets hit on the top part of the back of his head with an axe blade, splitting his skull completely in half. And as the camera shows from the split in the wound, it was actually Medina who hit him with the axe. Giles looks at her and says, "Sweet axe skills." Medina says, "Thanks. I wanted to come up with a sweet one-liner like, 'You were axing.' That would be really cool, right?" Giles looks at her and says, "That was pretty cool as is." We go back to Brody and Zach as they are still driving. They make it to the record store, and Brody looks at the sky to see that the moon is red as they go in. The place has been completely trashed. They see Abigail, and she's been beaten up bad. They see a book on the ground, and Zach asks if that's Satan. She tells him, no, that's Aloth. Brody asks her if this is where the pages came from. She inquires if they still have the Black Hymn. Zack tells her that they played it. Her words, well then you fucked us all. And then the bodies of the possessed will kill all in their path in preparation for Aloth's ascension on the next blood moon. And they essentially have until 3 a.m. to get it reversed. She then tells them that when Aloth comes, he will fuse with the darkest host he finds. Brody asks how they could stop it. She asks if they still have the Black Hymn. Before she can finish explaining what to do, a hand drives through her back and out her chest, holding her heart. We then see it's the possessed body of her boyfriend, Byron. He yanks his hand back and takes a bite out of her heart. We then go back to Medina, Giles, and Dion, who are still at Brody's house, none of whom know where Brody's at. Dion says that his dad told him they should all head to the school, and that is where they were heading before she showed up, because it's Gray Point's Civil Defense Center. Medina asks if his dad was the warden. Dion responds, he is, I mean, was, until he got possessed and ate my mom's skin off. Giles looks at him and pretty much tells him, you're still on that, get over it, that happened hours ago. Medina then responds they should go on ahead and head there because they won't be safe out on the or on the outside. Dion rushes back to the door and puts a note for Brody on it. We then see a hilltop view of the town showing several locations on fire. We then see a car drive up to a spot and stop and see the demon Terry approach. The occupants in the car exit, showing that it's Aeon, his lady friend Shanna from earlier, and a few of the hooded acolytes. They walk up to Terry. Terry takes off his heart-shaped sunglasses, revealing that he actually has no eyes. Terry tells Aeon, we need you to destroy the Black Hymn. Aeon states that they came to get it and not destroy it. Terry explains that the ones who performed it may try to reverse it before Aelon's ascension. Shanna asks if he, Terry, can destroy it. We then learn that only those who still have a soul can touch the pages of the Black Hymn, and that he actually does not have one. Aeon declares that he has one condition. If he destroys the Black Hymn, he is to become Aeloth's vessel. Terry then explains that Aeloth will bond with the blackest soul nearby, who will not resist his power. Hearing this brings a smile on Shanna's face. She then pulls out a knife and stabs Aeon in the back with it, sending him on his knees. She stabs him a few more times and then drives the blade down his throat, saying, now look who has the gag reflex. He pukes a little blood, he falls down, he's dead. Shanna then basically gets down on her knees and declares that she will be the one to destroy the Black Hymn, and that she will be, you know, she's pledging her allegiance to Aeloth. She's then instructed that she needs to find Brody, that he's the key to everything that's going on. We then see Zack and Brody back on the road. Brody is trying to make sense of everything that happened and everything that Abigail told him as well. He then looks on Zack's dashboard and sees a cassette. He grabs it, and then he says he has an idea. He tells Zack that they need to go back to his house, grab his guitar and the pages, and that they have to learn to play the song backwards. Zack gets pissed. He decides he wants nothing to do with that, and that he is content with watching the town around him burn to the ground. Zack then tells Brody that he doesn't care about anything and that Medina, Giles, and Dion were dicks. Brody then tells him whatever he is getting the pages and fixing things himself. Zack speeds up the car, and Brody ultimately forces him to stop the car, and then he gets out and starts walking. Zack profusely apologizes and begs him to come back. Brody hesitantly turns around and eventually does go back to the car. They go back to his house. Brody sees the body that Medina killed while Zach goes to the door. Zach finds the note that's on the door. He folds it up and quickly puts it in his pocket. They go inside, and Brody is met by his demon uncle while Zach goes to the kitchen to get a beer. When he comes back, he sees Brody being choked. He chugs the beer really quick and breaks the bottle over the demon's head, releasing Brody. The demon aunt comes out of nowhere, and the two chase Brody and Zach into a bedroom. They barricade the door, and Zach starts looking for things that they could use to kill the demons with. He finds a box in a closet marked church stuff. Inside were very large sex toys. After a moment of joking, the two rush out of the room and proceed to fight the two demons with the sex toys. Seeing that this isn't working, Brody tells Zach to keep them busy, and he flees to the garage and gets a chainsaw. He spends a hilarious moment trying to get the thing to turn on. He gets it turned on and rushes back into the house to the excitement of Zach. Brody takes one step, trips over the rug, and falls down, losing the chainsaw in the process. The uncle demon drags Zach to the bedroom, leaving Auntie Demon alone with Brody. She tries to shove his face into the chainsaw blade, all the while in the other room, the uncle zombie and Zach are brawling in the bedroom. As the demon has Zach press up against the wall, we see Zach trying to reach for another fatter sex toy sitting on the table close by. He gets it and proceeds to beat the demon mercilessly with it, and ultimately rips his lower mandible from his face. Zach leaves the room and attempts to hit the other demon, but gets backhanded for his trouble in the face. This does free Brody, however. Brody grabs a chainsaw and eviscerates the demon. She stands up, staggers a few steps, and we see her intestines fall out of her stomach as she's walking. She then lunges in the air at Brody and lands on top of him. As he struggles, he manages to push her off of him. He reaches beside him and picks up two vibrators and proceeds to drive them both through either side of her skull. The two sit there for a moment. David, who's not possessed, unlocks the front door and walks in. He enters the house, and then Brody grabs a chainsaw and immediately chops off his head. And here we have yet another fantastic exchange of dialogue. Zach looks at Brody and simply asks, "Pretty sure he wasn't possessed." To which Brody simply replies, "What? Oh no, of course he was. He came in and he said something about Satan. You didn't hear him say that?" Brody then goes into his bedroom to retrieve his guitar and the pages. When he grabs his guitar, the lights begin to flicker again and the windows in his room open up and we see the pages blow outside. Before he could even go and do anything, the pages are gone. Brody rushes back to the living room to tell Zach what happened and to get his help. He looks down and pauses mid-sentence to see the dead bodies of his demon aunt and uncle in a 69 position. Zach simply says, "What? They were like that when I found them." Zach tells Brody he is only going to help him because he sucks at it, but they need better weapons first. They go back to the garage and fashion some weapons and leave. They start their search for the pages, and along the way, they entertain themselves by killing a few demons. When they find the third page, a pantless demon is standing on it. Brody uses a weed eater that he fashioned with a barbed wire string and slices his lower extremities off and kills him. They find the fourth page at the school and make their way inside. Inside, Brody is met by an axe hitting the wall close to his head, and he sees that the axe wielder is Medina. She greets him and Zach, and they walk in. She tells them we're holed up inside. Inside a room in the school, we find Giles and Dion playing D&D under lantern light. The other three walk in. Dion is excited to see Brody is okay and mentions the note on the door. Brody says that he didn't see a note. A moment later, Brody goes to sit with Medina. She's sharpening her axe blade with a stone that was in the classroom. She sees an injury on Brody's right hand that he got from the fight with his aunt. Medina grabs a first aid kit from her bag. Inside the bag, Brody sees Zach's jacket. He asks her about it and where she got it. She explains that Zach gave it to her that night, and she was told Brody wasn't interested. He looks at her with confusion, and she said that it was in a note, and she gave Zach to give to him. He tells her, "I didn't get that note either." He confronts Zach about this, and this leads to a pretty brutal fist fight between the two friends. Zach overpowers Brody and stops, leaving him beaten. As Medina goes to check on him, Zach storms away, grabs his chainsaw, and exclaims, "Death to false metal." A few moments later, Brody explains the plan that he has to play the hymn backwards. Dion states that when they played it originally, the neighbors became possessed and reminded Brody that when that happened, their amps blew up. Brody tells them he knows where he and that they need to get to them because it's their only shot to reverse the spell. They then make their way to Ricky Dagger's house and get inside. They are met by Shanna and the Acolytes. They surround the group, and Shanna demands to know where the Black Hymn is. During the course of this, some things are said. Giles gets hit a couple of times, and Shanna finally grabs Medina and holds a dagger to her neck or to her stomach. Zach says, okay, reaches down in his boot, pulls the pages out from between his boot and his shin, and hands the pages to Shanna, who then turns around and rips the pages to shreds. She orders them to tie Brody and the other three up, and meanwhile, after they are sent to another room, Shanna and the crew begin performing a rite to bring Aeloth up from hell. While this is going on in the other room, we see Brody and Medina and Giles and Dion tied up and laying down on the floor. Brody begins to apologize to Medina about everything, saying this is not what he wanted when he performed the Black Hymn. He was really sorry about everything, and he only did it because he felt powerless. Medina looks at him and says, "You're not powerless. You could still do this." During this exchange, we start hearing some loud banging on the other side of the room, and up through the ground is now the eyeless body, formerly known as Ricky Daggers. He decides he wants to go on ahead and kill somebody, and he wants to know who he's going to basically face fuck first. Giles starts kicking Dion toward his feet, and suddenly, out of nowhere, Ricky Daggers gets knocked down, and we see Zach has returned, and he begins to blunge into this demon to death with a hammer. He's wearing corpse paint, and he's, you know, looking really black metal at this moment, and he unties everybody and extends a hand to Brody and says that he came back. He, you know, wore metal heads. We stick together. In a funny exchange, he looks at Medina, and Medina's like, "So you guys fight and you go home and you put on makeup," knowing this, all of this probably took about 15 minutes. And he's like, "It's not makeup, it's corpse paint. I'm ready for battle." And she says, "Well, you look really cute anyway." He then looks at Medina and simply says, "Hey, can you pull me off?" And he looks down at the chainsaws in his hand, and she's like, "Oh," and revs him up. After that, Zach leaves to go fight off some demons on the outside. In the next section, we see Dion sneaking around the corner with a sword in his hand, and as he turns a corner, he sees a demon, and he gets ready to swing the sword at it, and he loses his sword. The demon knocks him to his knees and quickly jerks his head around a couple of times, snapping his neck and ripping the head completely off of the shoulders with the spine still attached. The others happen to make their way into the amp room, where Giles fires his paintball gun at a pair who grab both of his arms, and one of them rips an arm off and proceeds to beat him to death with it. One of the demons makes his way towards Brody, and he activates the drill that happens to be duct taped to his, or to the headstock of his guitar, and drives it up through the mandible and kills it. Zach is then seen outside, face to face with five demons, and he's got two chainsaws in his hand. He makes a charge, jumps from a tire that's in the front yard, sending him into the air, and he's spinning, and he swings and hits a few of the, or hits all the demons with them, with it. And as he lands, we see heads falling off, bodies get cut in half. All these demons are now dead. We go back in and see Shanna ordering the remaining demons to kill Medina and Brody. Zach enters the room once more and kills them all, leaving Shanna to be the only one left. It's now 3 a.m. Shanna stands up as the clouds start rumbling on the outside. We see lightning flickering all over the place, the ground starting to quake, and she opens her arms as she disrobes. Now she's completely nude, demanding Aloth come in and take her. Aloth makes his way into her, and as he's getting ready to fully take her over, we see a blade shove through her chest from behind, and she falls down dead. Zach kills Shanna. From this point, Aloth now enters Zach because he was the blackest soul nearby. He's now fully transformed. We see him with this gigantic demon head with these large horns protruding from his skull. And basically, he almost looks like something out of Clive Barker's Nightbreed. And it was a very impressive job. Brody turns around and he grabs his guitar and he attempts to play the hymn in reverse. And as he's getting ready to do so, he realizes, holy crap, my guitar's out of tune. And he's working on tuning it. Medina's telling him to hurry. Zach makes his approach, and he smacks Brody around a few times. And we're seeing the magical demon powers at work. One minute he's in front of him, hitting him. The next minute he's behind him and smacking him and knocking him onto the ground. And this happens a couple of times. Brody then turns around to get ready to play again. Zach makes a couple of remarks about how he's now going to be doing a solo project. He doesn't need the rest of the band. Makes a few music jokes, and as Brody makes his way back to the stage, he gets impaled by one of Zach's horns, and he's now down on the ground bleeding. He makes his way towards Medina, and as he's making his way slowly towards Medina, he grabs his guitar, and he starts to play a few things, and all of a sudden, he stands up, and he's now playing this really sick black metal riff to the demon's surprise. He's repeatedly telling him, that ain't gonna work, you're not playing the hymn, that's not how you do it, and then suddenly he starts playing the notes on the black hymn in reverse order, which causes the demon Aloth to retreat back into Zach's body. He goes over to the fallen Zach, who's now wincing in pain, and he's telling him, you gotta kill me, you gotta kill me, that's the only way you're gonna stop this demon, he's too powerful, I can't control him. Turns around and he rips off the necklace that Brody is wearing, which happens to have a razor blade in it, or attached to it. Brody takes the blade, and Zach makes him cut his throat, ending his life. After this, Medina consoles him. Brody gives the horns. Our screen goes to black, and we see the words 2 months later. We now are in front of Brody's house again. And there's a for sale sign sitting out in the front, or standing in the front yard. We go into Brody's room. We see Medina is now dressed more like a metalhead chick than she was when they first met as a preppy. She's sitting on the bed with Zach, who's laying down, wearing nothing but jeans. He doesn't have a shirt on. They're smoking a cigarette together. They're talking music, and then she gives him a kiss and she leaves. Brody gets up, he's getting ready to fasten his pants, there's music playing in the background on his record player, and then all of a sudden, we see the record start playing in reverse, and we hear this demonic voice come through the speakers. Brody's freaking out, he's hugging his pillow, and we find out that it's the spirit of Zach completely messing with him. And he's like, I got you, dude, it's really me, blah, 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 and then that's when the movie ends. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Deathgasm. I hope if you've not seen this movie yet, you go and watch it. It is available on Peacock. If you're like me and you want a physical copy of it, I say go on Amazon right now and order it. It is wonderful. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's one of my top five favorite movies of all time, not just in the realm of horror, but altogether. This movie is very special to me for many of reasons. The biggest of which is I'm a metal musician. I love playing death metal. I love playing black metal guitars. I'm a vocalist as well. So when I originally read the premise of the movie, and then I was a little hesitant on it at first. I was like, what the hell is this? But, you know, when I sat down, I grew and watched it. I grew so attached to the everything about it. All the nods to early black metal album covers, the nod to Immortal with the music video recording scene. You know, all of the key phrases that you would have heard metalheads saying, like death to false metal, you know, referring to guitars as axes and all of that good stuff. Personally, in my opinion, this movie could do no wrong. I could literally watch this movie like two, maybe three times a day if I really wanted to, if I had nothing better to do. It's a wonderful piece. I highly recommend it. The fact that it was only made with $200,000 and that it only took 20 days to make is really astounding to me. Seeing all the visuals, the CGI work that was done with all of the electricity, the practical effects, all of it. I was very impressed. A while back, it was rumored that there was supposed to be a Deathgasm 2. I don't know if that ever came to fruition or not. I really hope that it does. Deathgasm is one of those movies I would really like to see a continuation with, just to see what happens, you know? But in reality, though, it's a perfect movie that doesn't need a sequel. It ended the way that it should have ended. Life goes on with the characters. They live their life. They do their thing. Zach's now, you know, haunting Brody for all eternity, most likely, you know. So, but I hope you enjoyed this episode. I do apologize for the roughness of the audio here. I did have a working microphone for a little bit. For some reason, it crapped before I was even able to start. I did a couple of test recordings with it, and it worked perfectly fine, but for some reason, it just took a fat shit. So I'm hoping to get some updates done to my equipment here in the coming weeks or so. But for right now, the first few episodes are going to sound rough like this. So with that being said, I am Patrick. This is Night of the Living Podcast. And I hope you enjoy Deathgasm.
What the fuck? Pretty sure he wasn't possessed.
What? Oh, no. Of course he was. Because when he came in, he said something about Satan. You didn't hear him say that?